Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Good morning and welcome to Morning Glory. On Thursday Live, we are airing live from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam, where the current time is exactly 40 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Today is Thursday, November the 15th, 2018, and the countdown has begun for the big day, which is only 7 days away from here. Next week, Friday, is the big day. Right now, Prashanti Nilayam is in the thick of the birthday celebrations. As you know, the 93rd birth anniversary of our beloved Bhagwan Baba will be celebrated next week on the 23rd of November 2018. I believe it's a Friday. Already spiritual seekers from everywhere are here and busloads and taxis are arriving into the ashram every hour. You can almost smell the joy of the upcoming celebrations in the air of Prashanti Nilayam, in the beautiful breeze that blows in our ashram. And what is helping further is the picture-perfect weather conditions in Prashanti these days. We have overnight lows of, believe it or not, 17 degrees, which makes evenings and night times quite nippy, and is clear and sunny in the daytime with a maximum of about 30 degrees Celsius, with clean, crisp air. Over the next few days, we are going to be enjoying a wonderful lineup of programs, that is musicals and dance and dances and dramas. And there is a very important conference also going to be happening here called Living with Sri Satya Sai. Then on Sunday, which is 18th of November, the traditional chariot festival or the Rathotsavam will be celebrated with the traditional gaiety and music in the ashram. As always, we will celebrate Ladies' Day on 19th of November. On 20th and 21st of November, we will see an unusual conference, which is the one I was referring to. It's hosted by the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization, and we will hear a lot more about it in just a few moments from none other than the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization, Mr. Nimish Pandya, who will be joining us live via the telephone to bring Morning Glory listeners up to speed about this unique event. Following the 2 days of conference on the 20th and 21st of November, we will have on November 22nd, as always, the convocation of Baba's University, the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And then, drum roll, November 23rd is the biggest, most glorious day in the Sai calendar. And like always, it will be the grandest celebration ever all over the world, in every samiti, in every part of Bharat, in 121 countries, people in unison will celebrate the advent of the avatar, because that is the landmark day when he descended on earth for our sake. So without any further ado, let us try to connect the financial capital of India with the spiritual capital of the universe, that is Mumbai with Prashanti Nilayam. And let me switch on the mic and let us catch up with Mr. Nimish Pandya, the All India President, about this upcoming Sai spiritual conference called Living with Satya Sai. So I hope he's on the line. Sai Ram, Mr. Pandya, can you hear me?
Sai Ram, Karuna, Sai Ram to all your listeners, and good morning, and thanks for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Morning Glory Thursday Live. Sir, what can you tell us about the purpose of this upcoming conference that is scheduled to be held in Prashanti Nilayam on November 20th and 21st?
Yes, Karuna, this conference is essentially a very important conference, because the Satya Sai organization, as you know, has only one objective, and that is that the members who come on board of this organization are committed to transforming themselves. Bhagwan always wanted that the devotees must first and foremostly address self-transformation as a part of living with Sri Satya Sai. Mm-hmm. The theme of this conference is called Living with Sri Satya Sai. And what does it entail? This conference is trying to lay down all the messages of Bhagwan and crystallize them so that every devotee can embark upon the path of self-transformation with practice. As you know, Karuna, Bhagwan never was happy with speeches and for sermons. He was always insistent that everyone must practice what Bhagwan has told us, and practice was most important for Bhagwan. In today's world, I think it is very essential that all of us who claim to be devoted to Bhagwan must be seen to practice what Bhagwan has told us rather than just be. There are many dimensions that Bhagwan asked us, that this organization is meant for people who have this goal of self-transformation. This organization is not meant for people who want to transform other people. Mm. And that fundamental issue is like going back to the roots as far as Bhagwan's message is concerned. And this conference is going to address that so that we lay a very strong foundation for the future. And everybody who associates henceforth, and even from the people who already associate, all become very clear in their objective if they're all here to improve ourselves and not anybody else. And this is what would please Bhagwan, because ultimately Bhagwan wants all of us to be realizing his power within us, his divinity within us, so that he and I are one, what he'd always say. So we can experience this in this life itself. Otherwise, there's no meaning doing anything else if we cannot dedicate ourselves to experience his divinity.
Okay? Mm. Very
so that's
nice.
The whole purpose.
Very nicely summed up, sir. Where will it be held exactly? Because it's a huge one.
This, yes. Yeah, we are going to have 20 and 21st, 2 days dedicated for this. We're going to have the sessions in the Sai Kulwant Hall on the 20th morning and evening, 21st morning and evening. And all these four sessions are fundamentally dedicated to collective practices of all the sadhana that Bhagwan has indicated to us. For example, there'll be a collective meditation session in the entire Sai Kulwant Hall. There'll be a collective recitation of Jap in the Sai Kulwant Hall. We'll be reciting the Sai Gayatri together. And there are all the items are based on the themes of living with Sri Satya Sai. And that is the whole point that we're going to have. So the sessions in the Sai Kulwant Hall will be all practical sessions where the entire mass of devotees who assemble will participate together. There'll be very minimal speeches except on the last day. And the two sessions in the Purnachandra Auditorium are going to be elaborated on these practices that Bhagwan has sort of endeared us to follow and practice in our day-to-day life. For example, Soham. Mm. Soham will be jointly recited by all together in the hall, the Sai Kulwant Hall. And the Purnachandra will deliberate more on the benefits of what Soham can do. So we've divided this into two parts. The Sai Kulwant Hall will be practicals. And the Purnachandra will be the elaboration of the understanding of those practical sadhana that Bhagwan has told us.
So who can participate? Do you have to be like a card-bearing member?
No, fundamentally, yes, Karuna. Fundamentally, we've invited all the spiritual coordinators of all the samitis of India, from all the states of India. But incidentally, it is open to everyone who wants to join. So we are not restricting this to anything. We had the registration process only because there is a limitation of accommodation, Prashant in there. But as far as participating in the Sai Kulwant Hall is concerned, everyone is welcome. And even in the Purnachandra Auditorium, we have invited all the samiti, conveners, spiritual coordinators, office bearers of the country, because henceforth, post the conference, there is going to be a very, very structured program to carry this to the grassroots level throughout the country.
So why did you pick this approach that just leave it open to everyone? What was the rationale?
Because I think every devotee has a right to understand that Bhagwan wants him or her to practice. And practice is the only way we can be true to Bhagwan's message and Bhagwan's love for us. Mm-hmm. So we're not really restricted it to anybody.
I see. So anybody who's even visiting Prashanthi Nilayam for the birthday celebrations, as long as they are seated on time, they can benefit from it.
Yes, yes. They will all participate together. They will enjoy the mass participation of all the sadhanas that Bhagwan has given us. Because, you know, Sai Kulwant Hall is always open to everyone. So there is no restriction in the Sai Kulwant Hall. And as far as the Purnachandra is concerned, yes, capacity will determine. As long as the hall is full, all are welcome. And beyond that, they are still welcome if they can accommodate themselves there.
I see. Your final thoughts for the listeners of Morning Glory about the upcoming conference?
Well, I would only say that I think time has now come that to be true devotees of Bhagwan Shri Satsai Baba, I think we all need to practice and reflect his love and glory. I think the time to talk is over. Silence must be the way of life, and practice should manifest as far as Bhagwan's teachings are concerned. So that is the only way the glory of Swami can spread throughout the world. Otherwise, we would definitely have deterred from our path, and probably we would then be responsible for the world to misunderstand Bhagwan if we don't reflect his message correctly.
Very nicely said. And I think it's never not a good time to revisit the fundamentals and do a self-audit. We constantly need to do that if we are genuinely interested in following Swami's teachings.
Yeah, Karuna, you're right. Self-audit is very important. If we do not focus on improving ourselves, And if you are going to be constantly involved in other people's lives, I think that is the greatest disservice to Bhagwan's message.
Totally. And it's always so much like tempting to poke our noses in other people's business rather than reflecting inwards and seeing what's going on inside our heads.
Yeah, unfortunately, today it's become a trend. Everybody is bothered about everybody else and trying to improve everybody else, but nobody wants to bother about themselves. I think that's our problem.
So it's very nice in the sense, it's very self-empowering. The focus is on oneself and within, instead of going out all the time.
Yes, and Karuna Swami established the Satsai organization only with one thing. The charter very clearly says that this organization has been granted by Bhagavan to us with love and grace only to realize our own inherent divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And even the entire concept of service, Karuna, is based upon seeing God in the beneficiary. You see, today we have so much issues with people trying to get attached with the seva they do. They become egoistic of the seva they do. But they miss the fundamental point that, look, we are doing all this to dedicate everything to Bhagwan and to experience that Bhagwan is the doer and not we. Now, that's the point which is missing, which we want to reinforce, that we are not an NGO. We are a spiritual organization that does service in the most unique way, completely selfless. And therefore, there is no question of claiming any credit for any work that we do at any time. Now, this is what Bhagwan would want us to do. And the sense of doership is the biggest problem with mankind today.
Mm-hmm. I, me, and mine. Those are our favorite three words.
Yes. Me, mine, my work, my Balvitar, my Narayan Seva, my project. And my mind doesn't seem to be ending. And that creates all the trouble for everyone in the world.
Truly. Well said. Well, thanks for all that update. And thank you for the inspiration that you have shared with us this morning, sir. I appreciate
thank you
joining me on the phone.
Yeah, thank you, Karuna, and I greet all the listeners. Sai Ram, very warm Sai Ram, and let's all be together on this path of sadhana. Jai Sai Ram.
Jai Sai Ram, sir. Thank you. So, dear listeners, that was Mr. Nimish Pandya joining us live over the phone lines from Mumbai, India's financial capital. And he was connected, incidentally, to Prashanthi Nilayam, the world's or the universe's spiritual capital. Nice combo, I think. And he was speaking to us about the upcoming conference that the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization is organizing in Prashanthi Nilayam on November 20th and 21st. And the theme is Living with Sri Satya Sai. And as you heard, we are all welcome. It's open to all as long as we are, I think, respectfully seated on time. The worst thing to do is when something so important is happening in the mandir, people keep walking up and down and dropping in at their convenience. I think if we are serious about attending the proceedings, it's best to be seated for the entire duration if possible. So that was the blitz about that conference. And I hope, dear listeners, all of you, dear sisters and brothers, are on your way to Prashanthi Nilayam, your true home. And you're going to participate in the wonderful celebrations that are coming up. But if for some really important reason you are going to be celebrating this momentous occasion elsewhere, you can still stay connected to Prashanthi Nilayam through radiosai.org. You can watch all the programs live, or you can watch them deferred live, because if it's a different time zone you are in, you can always watch them leisurely by logging on to Radio Sai and seeing all the videos of the morning and evening programs. And you can download our app on the mobile phone. Now, I just want to remind all our listeners that yesterday was 14th of November, and in India it's celebrated as Children's Day. And want to send greetings out from Team Radio Sai, from Team Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini, from everyone in Prashanthi Nilayam, to all the children out there, because you are the future of the world, you are the future leaders, and these children, the values that they grow up with will determine the future of our universe. So yesterday, being November 14th and Children's Day, the multimedia team at Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini debuted a beautiful song called Tujhe Naman. It is a song of salutation to the power that created the sun, the moon, the nature, the creation, the air, the rivers, the lakes, the bubbling streams, everything around us, the stars, the planets. Tujhe Naman, Tujhe Naman. This song I'm going to debut for the first time on Radio Sai for your listening pleasure and inspiration, and I hope you will find it worth your while to share it with your Balvikas groups, with your classes if you're an educator, and enjoy the catchy beat. And this song was written by, I must mention some of the credit, by Mr. M.S. Giridhar, originally in Kannada, and Rashmi Mishra was kind enough to translate it into Hindi. The music was arranged by Mr. Atma Swarupa. The recording was done by the multi-talented Anirudh of Radio Sai. It was mixed and edited by Brother Sainath at the Radio Sai Studio in Sundaram. And the singer is none other than Sai Krishna, a student of Swami's primary school here in Prashantinilayam. So here is Tujhe Naman by Sai Krishna of the Prashantinilayam School, Primary School. This will be followed by an amazing lineup I have for you. See, like a good hostess, every week I strive hard to serve you a spiritually delectable and nourishing menu on Morning Glory. Today I have a brand new episode of Tris with Divinity. It's an interview that Brother Bishu has conducted with Ms. Malini Kalyanam. Now, this is a two-part conversation. You can catch the... Today, I'm playing part one. And next week, you can catch the conclusion right here, same time, same place. And I have one very important thing to share with you before I let you go and before I play Tujhe Naman. Bhagwan's birthday, we will be celebrating on 23rd of November. And those of you who, like some of us, celebrate our birthdays in two different ways, once according to the solar calendar and once according to the lunar calendar, I want you to know that Bhagwan's nakshatra birthday, according to the calendar that we follow in India, the lunar calendar, the Hindu calendar, it falls on 26th of November. So if you're cutting the cake in Bhagwan's honor on 23rd of November, please enjoy a big slice and have a great celebration. And whichever way you celebrate your traditional birthdays, if you wish, you can celebrate that in the traditional manner on the 26th, which I believe is a Monday. And that is his nakshatra or star birthday. And of course, he's the head of all our families. So as the head of my family, I'm going to celebrate it in the traditional Kashmiri way by making delicious tahar, which is yellow rice. And I'm going to offer it to Bhagwan and birds and animals and gobble up the rest for my lunch thereafter. Nice and hot and tasty. And cake, of course, we will enjoy, and many other things on 23rd. So if you want to increase your opportunities to celebrate the advent of the avatar, 23rd is the big day and 26th is the nakshatra birthday. With that, I leave you to enjoy Tujhe Naman by Sai Krishna. It's an offering by the multimedia team at Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini, and I'm very delighted to debut it for the first time on Radio Sai for your listening pleasure. This will be followed by Tris with Divinity with Malini Kalyanam. Have a great, awesome Saisam day ahead. And if you have any feedback about the interview with Mr. Nimish Pandya, about the song Tujhe Naman, or about the Tris with Divinity with Malini Kalyanam, or any other Radio Sai offerings, please feel free to reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and have a great day ahead. And enjoy the rest of the show. Sai Ram.
तुझे नमन सूर्य चंद्र भूतारे जिसने Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to this episode of Tryst with Divinity, our series on Radio Sai, where we have conversations with people who have been touched with the love of Bhagwan Baba. And Swami has sent to the studios today Mrs. Malini Kalyanam from Chennai. She is truly a multifaceted personality, wearing a plethora of beautiful hats, right from pottery to painting, Bharatnatyam to energy healing, gardening to greening our surroundings, apart from being an active social worker, educator, trainer, inspiring leader, and of course, being the proud daughter of Mr. V. Kalyanam, the last private secretary of Mahatma Gandhiji, who is still going strong at 96 and lives the life of a Gandhian to the T. In fact, if one sees the life of Mr. Kalyanam as he lives today, one would be filled with awe, admiration and inspiration, and also tremendous hope, because here is someone who, nearly after 70 years of Gandhiji's passing, still believes in every principle and precept of Gandhiji and lives it in his daily life. Just like they say about Gandhiji, that history will scarce believe that such a man ever walked on earth in flesh and blood. Looking at Kalyanam sir today, one is filled with such a kind of sense of wonder. The generation of today, which lives on instant social gratification and continuous surplus consumption, will really find it hard to see that such a person like Mr. Kalyanam exists in today's times and exists happily, enjoying every moment of his life. So in this conversation, we will definitely talk about Mr. Kalyanam. But before we get on to that, let me also mention that Mrs. Malini Kalyanam is the founder and director of Artistic Pottery Training Academy. She is a trainer by choice and passion. She did her MBA in HR and Administration from the International University in Missouri, USA, and is the founder trustee of The Palm, along with his father. The Palm is a charitable trust engaged in educating poor children across India. Especially, it focuses on special children. She is also the content writer for Pumpuhar, which is a Government of India undertaking for arts and crafts, and she is contributing to the Chennai Airport division of this project. She is also someone who is interested a lot in plant and soil conservation, so she started an initiative called Plant Green Vistas. This platform brings together like-minded people to conserve nature and encourage afforestation. She was awarded Ambassador for Peace, Living for the Sake of Others, constituted by the Universal Peace Federation. And this was given to her during the United Nations World Interfaith Harmony Week in 2014. Besides, she is also a Reiki grandmaster, also an expert and trainer in angel therapy, French tarot card reading, crystal healing, and so on. Plus, a Bharatnatyam dancer, a yoga teacher, well, the list goes on. But what I also must mention is that she is among the youngest kidney donors in India. She happily gave one of her kidneys to her mother when she was just 18. Her mother, late Mrs. Saraswati Kalyanam, was in fact senior auditor, accountant general's office in the British era. So definitely she comes from very illustrious parents, and she is someone who lived up to doing illustrious things herself. And to top it all, she is an ardent devotee of Bhagwan, someone whose devotion to Bhagwan is as solid as morning sunrise. In fact, she is here now in Puttaparthi, this is the month of May in 2017, to serve in the ashram as one of the members of the Tamil Nadu Sevadal. She never loses an opportunity to be a part of the Sevadal serving in the ashram, and also engaged in many service initiatives of the organization. She is busy training and coaching a lot of members of the Sai organization conducting satsangs. She in fact conducted a week-long pottery workshop in the holy presence of Sundaram some time ago, and she was blessed to compile, author a beautiful volume on Bhagwan's abode in Chennai, Sundaram. This was called Journeying to the Golden Era. So this was a very beautiful, very cherished offering of hers to Bhagwan when she had the opportunity to document the story of the abode that Bhagwan always chose to reside in whenever he was in Chennai. So of course, she is a freelance writer and a journalist, but after she did this book, she felt that was the fulfillment of all her aspiration to write, to do journalism. That was the acme of everything that she could offer in that discipline. And from that day, she has not really done anything serious when it comes to writing or journalism, because she had found fulfillment with this work. Like this, there are so many initiatives that she is busy with all the time. She has so many students to whom she teaches various disciplines, from healing to gardening to pottery to HR. So the list, as I said, is endless. I'm only grateful to Bhagwan that he has arranged for her to be in Prashantanilam today and have this spare time so that we can do this satsang, talk about her journey to Bhagwan, talk about how he has shaped her in all these years, and how through her, his glory continues. So praying to Bhagwan that we feel his presence, we begin this conversation. Saram and welcome Mrs. Malini Kalanam to Radio Sai and to Tryst with Divinity.
Sai Ram, my humble pronouns at the outset to Swami, and I surrender to his lotus feet. I'm very thankful and grateful to him for all that he has blessed me with all these years. Loving Sai Ram to all my dear Sai brothers and sisters across the world.
So let's begin where it all began.
Yes, it is a big story which goes back, dating to somewhere when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably 15 or 16 when I first met Swami.
Mm-hmm.
To say that I met Swami would be unjust, because at that time I didn't know that he was an avatar.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually had a game of tennis. I used to be a good tennis player.
Oh, I didn't know you're a sportsman too.
I also had the privilege of having a few knocks with Vijay Amritraj.
Oh.
when I was in the club.
Mm.
And one day, after a game of tennis, a friend of mine said, "Come, let's go and meet Swami."
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering who this Swami is. Then she said, "You will find him very wonderful. So mm-hmm. just come on." We finished our game. So with rackets in hand, mm-hmm. wearing short mini skirts, and I still remember I was wearing a sleeveless top that day, and with rackets and in bikes, we proceeded to Abbotsbury.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too close, but just about a few streets away from the club. So Abbotsbury was a place that Swami used to come when he was in Chennai in the 70s. So we met him in the mid-70s, and there was a big crowd. So she said, "You can sit in a corner and watch when Swami comes." To me, I couldn't understand what she meant, and I said, "Come on, tell me, who is this Swami?" Then she said, "He is Sai Baba." Then she told me he's performed a lot of miracles at home, and when she was recounting all those miracles, suddenly the divine form appeared. And all the people were all seated very organizedly with folded hands. But somehow despite all the discipline that I was put to, when I saw this awesome figure, I just couldn't put my hands together. Mm-hmm. I was in awe.
Oh.
And my eyes just literally popped out when I saw this beautiful figure coming towards me in that direction. And I was amazed because everybody was with humble reverence. But I just sat on that cycle with one leg on the pedestal.
You were still on the cycle?
I was still on the cycle because I was a little diffident when I saw the crowd. Mm. I was, you know, I'm a person who's not normally used to this gathering. And, you know, there was a sect where there were fully gents in a separate corner and ladies in a separate corner. I wasn't sure. So, and my friend, when she saw Swami, she humbly put her bicycle in a corner, and I wasn't prepared. I said, no, let me stand, it's okay. And since I knew that in my cycle I could still see him from that distance, I stuck on sitting there. And I heard people screaming at me saying, what a girl this is, can't she come with folded hands, and what dress, my God. But then I just looked and I said, listen, I'm not going to be bothered about all this. I'm just going to watch this divine figure coming in. He looked like a hero. And you believe me when I say I had all kinds of thoughts. Mm-hmm. My first thought as a teenager was, it would be lovely if I marry this person.
Oh my God.
Okay. And I had all kinds of visions of this person. And I said, wow, this is the hero I would love to marry. And, you know, it might sound a bit ridiculous and funny, but I was not prepared at that point of time to see him as Swami, because I was used to this idol worship.
He was just Mr. Charming for you.
Yeah, Mr. Charming and handsome charming, not just charming. He was too handsome for words. I have goosebumps when I relate myself to that day. And, you know, that wriggly hair. That kind of thing. I just wanted to go there, touch his hair, and just plant one kiss and come out. And I was just telling myself, what if I were to do? Because I am supposed to be somebody who's a daring sort in my school, and I was more like a tomboy. So I just restrained myself, held on to the handle of my bike to make sure that I don't proceed any further. And slowly I was watching him. It was like a gliding swan coming with that robe there, totally mesmerized. And I was wondering, how on earth that this person I'm meeting today, suddenly out of the blue, when I didn't know anything about Sai Baba. Then when he was nearing by, it was too tempting. I just gave him a wink.
Oh my God.
Okay. And Swami, with his Abhaya Hasta, just did a blessing like this.
Oh, wow.
After that, he kept proceeding to other people, and my heart was thumping loud. I just didn't know what. I was wanting to ask her, where does this hero stay? Just let me know. I'd like to probably have his autograph and meet him for a couple of times and then see how we can go ahead. And subsequently, much later, maybe a few years later, I came to know, when I came in for seva, that at that time, Swami was in his 50s.
Oh.
Okay, I was just a teenager in my mind. But he looked like he was in maybe a little past 25 or 28 or maximum 30. I couldn't give him more than that. Okay, and it's difficult to say how I felt. You know what it is when you have a crush on somebody. Okay. And when I went home, I didn't dare tell this to my parents. I thought to myself, what do I say? It's something very close, I felt. Mm. And when I slept at night, I was hoping I'd meet Mr. Charming. And a few nights, a few days passed by when I kept continuing to think of him. And suddenly, you know, as is usual with every teenager, over a period of time, you tend to forget. By that time, this friend of mine, when she reached home, she was a bit upset that I had not said pranams and the way she expected me to be. Then she told me all the leelas that Swami had performed for her family. I was taken aback. Then I said, Well, maybe I'll get another chance, possibly if I'm lucky, to meet him. But little did I know that something was in store for me in the years to follow. The very next year, or a little after 1.5 years, my mother fell sick.
Mm-hmm.
She had never been sick even for a fever. She had a kidney failure.
Mm.
And my father rushed her to the Jaslok Hospital, Bombay. That time I was in college, finished schooling. I mean, I was in school, shunting from school to the hospital. So I wrote my public exam from the hospital, not going to school for some days. Then I did not pass in the first attempt, because obviously your mother is serious, you're now hardly going home, you can't sleep, nothing. I had one paper earlier, somehow finished that, and then was a big blow that she had kidney failure. Till then she was in the hospital undergoing dialysis in Chennai. Then I got admission in college. Just 1 week I was in college. I don't know what it is to be in college. Now, of course, when I see children saying they enjoy college life, I think, wow, I probably missed most of it. But I'm grateful to Swami for all that He has done for me, because I think what I missed was probably just a fragment of life. I was then transported to Bombay. My father took me and said, be with Amma. So most of my 3 years of college life was in Jaslok Hospital, Bombay.
Oh, so your mother was in the hospital for 3 years?
3 years.
Oh my God.
Okay. And the fact was that we had to find a kidney donor. We didn't have one. So my father thought it would be best to have a cadaver transplant done, so we could go to the US, have it done and come back. But our doctor, the physician, was Dr. M.K. Mani, one of the leading nephrologists here in India. He said she will not even last the journey for the flight. Mm-hmm. She was in her last days. Then he said, please bring her siblings along. My mother was born, fortunately, with 10 brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow.
A blissful family, to say the least. That is where actually the love of Swami that I see now, I saw in that family. And every one of her brothers and sisters were prepared to give a kidney for her.
Beautiful.
But Swami had other plans for this child who had dreams of marrying him. Okay? So then at that point of time, every donor got rejected. Suddenly, out of the blue, my mother's maternal uncle's daughter, who also happens to be her sister-in-law, decided to give her kidney. Fortunately, her kidney matched 100%, which is a very rare thing. We were all very delighted that she was going to have a second lease of life. But that was short-lived. The date of the operation was fixed as 18th June 1982. But a few months before that, we received a telegram saying that she was not prepared to donate.
Oh.
We had already made arrangements. The date of the operation was fixed. Everything was finalized, so there was no way that we could go back. You know, in those days, kidney transplants used to be done once a week, not like today, where you have 2-3 transplants a day. We really didn't know what to do. It came as a big blow to us. That time, this friend of mine, who had introduced me to Swami at Abbotsbury, she spoke to me and said, write a letter to Swami. And she gave me his address. At 10:30 in the night, from the 10th floor of Jaslok Hospital, in a postcard, I wrote to Swami a letter. I wrote the letter in the presence of my father. My father didn't believe in God-men. To him, God meant Gandhiji. Because all he knew at that time was Gandhiji. he did not know Sai Baba then. Subsequently, he came to know about Baba and devoted some time. But those days, he said, okay, if you think you must write and your friend has asked you, go ahead. But let me warn you that you will not get an answer. So think about it. I think it's a waste of time. But nevertheless, here is a postcard. It costs 25 paise, whatever. And he said, attach an acknowledgement due. Because in the Gandhian values that he held,
yes,
which was supreme, he said, it is ethical to put a acknowledgement due card so that that person can revert. So I did as per his instructions. And he came with me down to the ground floor. He came with me to post the letter. Just as I was putting that letter into the post box, before the post box could receive the letter fully, Swami sent two words in my Ajna Chakra.
Mm-hmm.
The Ajna Chakra is a very vital chakra. We have many chakras in the body. That chakra, he sent, look within. But that stupid girl that I was, I didn't know the meaning of look within then.
So this was just two words that just popped up in your consciousness.
Yeah, in the Ajna Chakra. That's it. At that point of time, I construed the meaning to be look within meant look within the country, because my father was looking for a cadaver transplant abroad. So the next morning I told my dad, I think we must start looking for donors in India, because that is the answer that I have received. I didn't tell him that this words I have received just at the time of putting the letter, because he might think I'm being very ridiculous. At that point, I felt I needed guidance, because I was a very young girl. I didn't know what was happening around me. I had a lot of friends. Most, being a tomboy, most of the people were boys. And I didn't dare tell any one of them that I had written a letter to Sai Baba, because they would think I've gone nuts.
Hmm.
You see? So, time passed by. And when the letter didn't evoke a response, my father said, didn't I tell you you would receive no response? Here. Okay, go ahead, let's continue. Life is to be endured, let's endure it. But somewhere my conscience told me that look within has some meaning which I probably didn't know then. Out of the blue, I went one day to check up my blood group, because my father said, we're all here, let's all do a blood group test, at least to know what our blood group is. I don't know what made him say that, but we did. I went a step further, probably because Swami was giving me that strength. And when I went forward, I realized I was just not a major. So the doctor said, I cannot take your kidney. I volunteered myself first to be a kidney donor. So he said, sorry, that's not possible, because you're only 17. You have a full year to go. And has somebody asked you or forced you to give a kidney? Then I said, no. He said, are you sure your father or any of your people have not forced you? I said, no. I've come out of my own volition and I am prepared. He said, you may be prepared, but we are not prepared to take it. So that was the second blow. I had to endure one full year, and Swami then started his miracles on me. That poor, thin weakling that I was, he gave me energy. He sent me pure white light every night till I was 18 and till the day of the operation.
He sent you white light.
Pure white light at 10:30 in the night.
Mm-hmm.
When the light started coming, I was scared because I could see a ray of light entering into me. So I became panicky. I didn't know whom to tell. I knew that if I told anybody, I would be taken to the mental hospital. So, at that point of time, I couldn't pray to Swami because I hardly knew him. So my prayers went as Gayatri Mantra or Vishnu Sahasranama or Lalita Trishati or any of the prayers that my mother had taught me. And I used to pray daily. I used to pray wondering, what is this light? I don't know. Help me, help me. Then suddenly I realized it was very soothing. It was very calming. One day Swami decided to do a trick. Instead of 10:30, he changed the program. He's always full of surprises, as you know. I mean, having known him now, I realize that was nothing. So he changed the timing to a half an hour later or 1 hour later, whatever. I was mentally prepared for this time, no? I realized the light would not come. So again, my worry started. Why has that light stopped? That light was coming every day. Now why is this light stopped suddenly? What's going to happen? So worried, the nature of worrying starts. When you get light, you worry. When you don't get light, you again worry. So Swami was putting me in a spell. I didn't know what was happening. Then again, the schedule of light, the lights were continuing till the date of my operation. So 1 full year, he gave me stamina. During this year, all the 12 or 13 tests that they do, including the tissue typing test, which is very important for a kidney donor, was executed. And Swami ensured that I get exactly 50% matching. If I was 0.5% matching, I could not be a donor. So that light was meant to make me perfect for the operation, ready for the operation, geared for it. But I didn't know it was Swami sending. The operation took place. One fine day, after a few years, my friend said, "How about visiting Puttaparthi? I think you should go and meet Swami." More to please her, I said, "Fine. And anyway, things are going fine. So if God wants me to go to a particular place, let me go as a pilgrimage."
But you are anyway fascinated by Baba, isn't it? Didn't you want to come to Puttaparthi?
I at that point of time, you see, I was taking care of my mother. So there was no one to look after her. And after having given my kidney, like, there were so many things to look after when after the transplant is over. And my mother had gone into pneumonia.
Oh.
So 3 months, I could not see her. She was in a glass room. So there were so many things that took place. And finally, a time came and I said, "Fine, let me go and see him to see." Then I told her, I said, "I'm making a trip." She was very convinced that I was a donor thanks to his grace.
Mm-hmm.
She was convinced. For me, I was happy, like as you said, I'm meeting Mr. Handsome. That's it. But when I came to see Swami then, the thoughts which I had then as a teenager were not there. It was like more of reverence. I had by that time become, I guess, a bit more matured, because I kind of felt that I was totally a different person, maybe because of the light that had come into me. I don't know. I'm not competent to answer why, how I became matured. But I felt that I owed a lot to him. So when he came for darshan from his room there, he was coming by. He stopped exactly in my row. I was probably the seventh or eighth in the row. And he asked me in Telugu. I was dazed because no one had ever spoken to me in Telugu then. Subsequently, Swami has spoken to me in Hindi, Tamil, English. But at that point of time, when he asked, he said, Amy, prayers anni baga cheppaledhe. Enduku? So I was dazed. I said, what prayer have I missed out that he is expecting that I have not said properly?
So Swami is telling you have not said your prayers properly.
So I said, Swami, what is this? Whatever my mother taught, everything, including the intonation, I have made sure that I am perfectly saying. So where is this drawback? He continued to go. Again he came. He said, Enma, prayers cheppaledhe baga. Enduku? Then too, I said, Swami, I don't know what you are saying. I said it in English within myself and said, Swami, have I missed out? I have been saying, I am recalling all those things and telling him while he's passing by. By the time he's going towards the gent's side, then he came back. Third time.
Oh my God.
Everybody knew by then there is something happening in this row between Swami. Conversation is happening. And that time, I decided to surrender. I should have surrendered in the beginning itself. The idiot that I was didn't. Swami went back and forth, and finally when I surrendered, he asked me point blank a question, which I just swooned after I heard. It was something I least expected. He just asked me in English this time and said, from the 10th floor at 10:30 night, with only your father sitting beside you and telling you all things about Swami, all the things that he could possibly think about Godman, you write a letter to me and you forget to thank me after the operation. I gave you pure light for 1 year. Where is the thank you for that? The moment he asked me this question, I fainted. Then I could see some sevadal, somebody bringing water, doing all this, bringing me to consciousness. By the time Swami walked towards the other side, he had already gone one, but before he could put to all this question, he had gone to that inner room, which was then the interview room, and then he had come. When he came, he was as bright as ever, but the question, that thank you, where is that thank you for all the light that I gave you? It came as a rude, striking shock that he is the sender for this light. He said, before your letter could be posted inside the letterbox, did I not give you two words to say, look within? Then I realized, did you not know that you are blessed as a donor? After he went a little steps ahead, he came back, did this Abhayahasta, and I regained my consciousness. Then, as usual, there were a lot of people asking me what happened, what happened, what happened. I was too dazed. This left me, you know, in a state of shock that I had not expressed my gratitude, because I believe in thanking the Divine for everything. And I thought I had said thank you for everything every day. But merely thanking for every day as a matter of routine is not what Swami expected. And Swami wanted to show that he had answered my prayers, which I had sent, which I subsequently came to know, and I told my dad.
Wow.
Then only he came to know of Baba, and then he used to come to Sundaram, you see, to hear the bhajans. He did not know of Baba, so he mistook, and he just rattled whatever came to his mind. And subsequently, when he followed Baba's teachings, he also realized, you know, the teachings of Gandhi and this, everything was relating. And I subsequently became an ardent follower. It's not right for me to call myself a devotee, because it is for Swami to say that she is a devotee of me. So I believe in saying I'm an ardent follower of Swami, and I am hoping to be, you know, doing as per his wish every time, doing not just seva, every breath of mine should be filled with sigh, sigh, sigh ever on my lips to say thank you.
Wow. There was that light of enlightenment.
Yes.
In a way, for 1 year he was preparing you to remove all that was perhaps not conducive for enlightenment.
Okay, I would like to add one thing further. You see, during all this, because I was a weak little thing, the matron of the hospital and the doctor, they came in at the last minute after the anesthesia was given, because this is a 6-hour operation. They said, even now you can go back and say you don't wish to be the donor.
Oh.
All these things took place. But Swami, with all that energy that he had given, I was just bubbling and waiting to give that kidney, because it's his leela. Who am I? He has bestowed this so beautifully. And I am somebody who's scared of an injection. Trust me when I say this, even today. So I know that but for that lovely pure white light, I could never ever do this, you know, this many 60 stitches on one's body. I cannot dream of such a thing. Even an ATS injection, I cannot take. I cry even today. I tell myself, is it most important to have this injection? I don't think I can. Can I afford to go in for a tablet? These kind of things. So you know how he has mentally prepared me to become brave and given me the exact dose of the thing. 50% matching. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
Wow. It has so many dimensions to it. You know, when you think about any act of Bhagwan, the way he captivated you.
Yeah.
And the way then he prepared you to learn to give.
Yes.
Right at that age.
Right. I feel so blessed, because I just think, you know, when people ask me, how did you give at such an early age? I tell myself, I don't think I was the giver. It was Swami who has done everything. I really don't know how I can call myself as a donor.
Wow. So I think that was one instance where you were fully convinced, right?
Yes.
That he is the divine. He is the supreme.
100%.
Initially, he was the most handsome person, but now perhaps you knew that he was the person of the universe.
Yeah.
And he's someone who knows you within and without, through and through.
Everything that goes in my mind, there are times when I tell myself, only me, I would write notes or keep it only to me. The very next minute, when I'm coming for a darshan or anything, he will pop up and give the answer to what was written in that book of mine, which nobody knows. Only my heart, my mind and my brain knows. So I'm convinced that he is the divine, the Paramatma, and there's no doubt on that. Ever since I've known Sai, I don't think I've ever gone to Tirupati and all these temple visits that I used to go so often. Because earlier, I used to run to the temples, go for every little thing, prayer, 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 like that. But after I've known Swami, I believe that he has taught a new dimension to humanity through seva, through the way we have to be. There is no need for idol worship. The divinity is inside you.
You worship him
inside.
You see
soul.
Him in everyone.
Yes.
And that's how you have spent so much of your time in social service.
Yes.
I think even otherwise it was there always, isn't it? Coming from a background of being the daughter of Mr. Kalyanam, He was always engaged in some acts of philanthropy and social service all his life.
Yes.
I think perhaps that
In fact, both my parents have, in a way I could say that I was always the selfless sort because they grew me up, I grew up in an atmosphere where I used to make slum visits. I used to teach those children, poor children, all these things were imbibed in me at a very young age. So to me, a mansion and a hut made no difference. I was at ease wherever I went, thanks to the upbringing of my parents. Now coming to with Swami has only added more value.
Perhaps it got its earlier it had just a social dimension. Perhaps now it got a spiritual dimension.
That's absolutely well put. You said it.
I think, and now, as you said, you didn't feel that you really need to go to temples to see the gods because you felt that if I have to experience him, I have to serve.
Yes.
I have to see him in everyone.
Everyone, right.
And I think that is how you have taken up so many initiatives.
Yes.
So if you can just share some of the initiatives that you have taken up and how Swami has guided you. And propelled you, gave you the courage to start some of these initiatives which are helping so many people now. Because I know when you start something like this, initially there are so many challenges. And in those initial years, you really need a lot of tenacity, courage and support from unforeseen quarters to keep you afloat. Yeah. And keep the inspiration going. So if you can share with us some of those stories, you know, which always inspire you whenever you think about doing something new, something which will help 10 people, 100 people.
Yeah. Actually, when I thought of pottery, I missed out on a lot of friends. I was in the corporate field as a HR. Heading a department for India is not a joke because you have 6 states that I have to look after. And being the country HR, I felt that, you know, there was a lot of work, a stress load. Now, coming in a corporate field, when you're heading a division and you're a lady, you have men folks who are working as subordinates. It's really an uphill task. Sometimes you're also given challenges in a different way such that your subordinates could be older to you in age. That is yet another hassle. The third thing is you are looking young, but you are actually old enough to be in that position. But people can't take you in that position because they see you as pretty young. You don't have the white hairs. So many times I've prayed to Swami and said, Swami, bless me with white hair soon.
Oh my God.
That blessing didn't come too quickly, all I did was I took vibhuti. I'm sharing the secret because I know that many people across the world may be born like me who didn't get their gray hairs in time. So I take the lot of vibhutis, I put them into water, mix it into a nice paste, and then apply it in a particular style. Like, you know, this Indira Gandhi hairstyle. So it's one side. So when I go to make a presentation, I appear like somebody in...
experienced and senior.
Yes, senior and, worthy of emulation.
Wow.
Okay? And every time I do this, trust me when I say, I've had a good number of people not just emulating me, but trying to get more information, doing their work seriously, getting engrossed. But when I was earlier...
It took you more seriously.
Yes. When I was doing the same session I would do without doing that, nobody for the taking. So this secret, I had to do it because I realized it's also a blessing. This vibhuti is also a blessing. So I said, let me apply it in full force. So... right until I was 52, now I'm about 55, till 52, I didn't have any white hair coming up. So my friends used to laugh at me and say, okay, wisdom is still not dawning on you. So I said, yeah, Swami has decided to give me wisdom at a later date. But till then, I don't need to go to any parlor. I'll do it myself and I just shaded the color. So these were little tricks that I would do. But I knew that the vibhuti was, you know, giving me courage also. This is one secret I'm sharing. So anybody across the world could also do this if they chose to do it. And when I was in the corporate life, I lost out on many friends because they felt pottery was an art which was not meant for the Brahmin community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the potters were a different low-class community. So my colleagues felt, what is our HOD trying to do? Why is she going to this place to learn pottery? Is she getting mad? Is she getting crankier? Is the stress too much on her? These were questions which were raised among themselves, and I could hear them. I mean, you go down the corridor, you will hear it if you're keen and shrewd enough. And by any standards in corporate life, I was considered to be a strict woman. So when I used to walk down, I used to tell myself, there's no way I'm going to get buckled down by what people say. I am going to learn pottery because it's an art which fascinated me. And I found that something at the age of 5, which I wanted to do, I couldn't do until I was 40 plus. And this I learned when I was in Bangalore. I was working in Bangalore then. So I decided, my parents were against it. My mother was then no more. My father would have been dead against it because for him, neatness, cleanliness was more important than anything else.
Yes.
To him, godliness is after cleanliness.
Correct.
So, being born to such a parent, he will not tolerate me coming home with dirty feet, dirty hands, messing up the place.
Mud
with
all
clay,
over.
Mud all over. No way. And, well, when you're married, you also have to listen to your husband and, maybe other relatives also. But I had the guts, thanks to Swami. I didn't bother about anybody. I said, Swami, you are with me. Let me learn this art. So weekends, without even having food, I would go learn the art, practice upon myself to become a professional, and that is how Artistic Pottery Training Academy was born. Today.
So how many years did you take to learn?
I took, I'm still learning, if you look at it. There's
okay.
There's no learning when it comes, there's no stop to learning when it comes to arts.
Absolutely.
Every day, I even learn from my students. There are different ways of doing certain things. Mm-hmm. Each one comes up with something new, and every day there's a learning, whether we like it or not, in any form in life. And this isn't any different. So.
But how many years after you rediscovered pottery that you started the academy?
I can't. I'm actually zero at the number games and dates.
So maybe a few years.
But I can't really say I went through a formal coaching of pottery like the way I do. I train my students in a very formal way, right from the nuances of pottery. You need to know everything in the basics. My potter who taught me, unfortunately, was a potter hailing from the community of potters. So they were illiterate.
Yes.
To them, teaching meant nothing. So I practically learnt nothing. But the dedication in me and the steadfastness with which I was willing to pursue the art, and with Swami's divine grace, I was able to reach this far. Today, Artistic Pottery is one of the leading centers in Chennai. You just go into Google, it's the first. You just have to put Chennai Pottery and my name will pop up in Google. Again, His Grace, I would call it.
Wow, that's amazing. So that's, it's strange that suddenly of all the art forms, you are drawn to pottery.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have no answers. And suddenly, Swami made me give up my corporate life. I was earning something like 1.5 lakhs a month. And you can imagine what that shock would be to a family when I decide one fine morning.
And this is in the 90s, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I decide, saying, no more, I'm going to be the goose that laid the golden egg. So, it comes as a crashing blow, not only to a parent or the family member or the spouse and the relatives, but also to friends. Mm. You see, they begin to just look at you and say, what? Sai Baba has made such a transformation in her. She says she doesn't want anything beyond him. She's only pursuing him. She must be crazy. But the same people who shun me then, are now relentlessly pursuing me, expecting me to be their child's guide, or their children, teaching their children pottery. See, the same person who felt that pottery is not for Brahmins. Now, how do you like this scenario being changed?
Wow.
Dramatic, to say the least.
Amazing.
And in a different way, Swami blessed me to be a healer. I didn't ever think I would enter into this line of healing. After my marriage, I could not conceive a child. So I had 100 fibroids in my stomach, uterus. Oh. So when I went to the doctors, all the doctors said I could never get a child. Then they did a scan. They found 100 fibroids. Then one doctor said, well, it's not surprising. She's got this many fibroids. I came home. My cousin was a doctor. And he said, this is nothing great. We can just remove the fibroids in just a matter of time. Come tomorrow morning, we'll do the surgery. You see, my faith in Swami is so much that I said, sorry, dear brother. Let's forget everything. I told my dad, I told everybody at home, including my spouse, saying, I'm sorry, I don't wish to go through any treatment. And I learnt Reiki. Mm-hmm. When I learnt Reiki, I just did it just like that, out of the blue. Suddenly one morning, I decided to go. My legs went to a class, I learnt. After I came back, I was asked a question. If you can heal yourself, wouldn't that be a great idea? I thought to myself, yes, why not? And I started healing myself. Morning and evening, 1 hour every day, all the fibroids were gone in 4 months' time.
Wow.
A total miracle, because when I went to the scan, I heard the doctor saying, she must be kidding. She must have sent her twin sister before. And she's just thinking that medical science can be some humbug. She now comes saying there are no fibroids. Now, what is this Reiki, whatever she's saying? She says she did some Reiki. You see, holistic healing is different and allopathy is different. So, they didn't at that point of time in the 1990s, the doctors were not prepared to accept this. I didn't do anything. I just took those x-rays of mine and walked out. After some years, I did the next level, next level, next level. As I went into the advanced levels, my teacher said, I bless you to become a healer. I want you to become a grandmaster and heal the whole community around you. I thought to myself that was too big a task. I said, I've come for myself. I've got healed. Whoever wants to get healed could obviously learn from her. But she had different ideas. She looked upon me as somebody different from the other set of students and said, no, you're blessed to be a healer and your journey begins right now. And she said, after the sessions were over, she asked me to do a surgery in her throat.
Mm-hmm.
I was panicky. Imagine doing a surgery on a throat. What if she loses her voice? What if anything happens was on my mind. She said, no. Have confidence in the divine and do it. And she was so happy after everything was over. And from that day, the healing session started on different people. I started teaching people. And Swami, one fine morning, for a bhajan session at home, blessed me just like that with a shaligram.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly at the light, the diya, which is there at the foot of the diya, there was a beautiful shaligram with two dots like eyes. And the beauty of the shaligram is every day the color changes.
Oh, even now?
Even now. There are times when it is orange, there are times when it is green, there are times when it is dark color. And what I do is I just put the shaligram, keep it in water, and I give it to the people, patients. They get healed also in addition to the healing therapy.
Wow.
And I was wondering why this shaligram, because Swami had blessed at my dad's place with a big shaligram, which was the green maragadam. So immediately when the shaligram came up, I said, my appa is not such a devotee of Swami, so that should come to me as a healer. So immediately people said, no, what is given to you is yours. If it is given to your father or whoever is the owner of that place, it goes to them. Then I realized that everything had a meaning. The reason why the color changes is for the healing properties to act. The other green one stays green.
Wow.
Thank you.